Welcome to the Creative Financing Podcast, where you'll learn how to structure terms and use various creative financing strategies to create profitable deals for short and long-term wealth. Whether you're a buy and hold investor, wholesaler, or flipper, learning creative financing will help you do more deals and unlock profits that you may not even know existed. On the Creative Financing Podcast, we break down actual deals we and our guests are doing and simplify the methods and terms used to execute these strategies. Now, let's dive in and create some terms.
Hello and welcome to the Creative Financing Podcast. I'm your host, Jonathan Gallegos, here with
Jeffrey Appaport.
And today, guys, we will be talking about lease options. I know this is a popular subject among a lot of you. It's a pretty straightforward and easy strategy to utilize. And so in our series of understanding creative financing and all the strategies, we wanted to make sure we cover lease options and use some examples for that. To cover that, right? So we're covering all the bases. So in this series, I know it's been a long one, but hey, it's all about understanding creative financing. And you know, the lease option is one of those strategies. But in the previous episodes, we've talked about contract for deed or land contract, first position trust deed and note, seller subordination, all inclusive trust deed or wraparound mortgage, and subject twos. So let's dive into that. Jeff, you got some examples for us on using lease options?
I sure do. Nice to have you back, Jonathan.
Thanks for covering the the mic for me.
It's much different when it's just me.
I know, it's lonelier, isn't it?
It very much is, yes.
It's funner, dude. Yeah, it's for sure funner.
Yeah, I agree.
You have a conversation while recording than...
Well, when you're doing it by yourself, you're not even really sure it's being recorded, right?
So. Yeah.
So we're going to talk about lease options. We're going to talk about them in a number of different ways. And, Jonathan, it's probably been, 3 years? We had Joe McCall on at one point as a guest speaker, and Joe is, a mentor and teacher and focuses on lease options, and it is just another strategy that you can use. And there are times where you want to use lease options, maybe as opposed to one of the owner financing strategies, and maybe we should talk about that first of when be the case.
Yeah, what scenarios would you want to use lease options as opposed to, let's say, a contract for deed?
Contract for deed and lease options are pretty close. And when I say that, lease options, the title's going to remain with the owner. With contract for deed, the title's going to remain with the owner, or, deed's going to be held in escrow. So,
yeah, there's just...
Owner is still on
work with one and versus the other,
right? With contract for deed, you're going to have a closing. I was actually talking, I did a coaching call for the academy yesterday, and one of the students asked if they could do a closing for contract for deed, but no closing, right? No title insurance. And I did not like that idea very much. And the reason that he wanted to do it is that he wants to buy on terms and then sell on terms. And he lives in a state where they charge a pretty hefty transfer tax. Uh-huh. So he's going to have some expense that normally you don't really want. So doing it as a lease option would avoid that, because there's no transfer, there's no sale, and there's not even, you don't even need a closing, right? Maybe just a title check, and you could handle the rest of the paperwork on your own.
Yeah.
So that would be the main issue. Maybe one of the other issues would be how long is the default process? So if your buyer were to default on you, how long will it take you to get the property back? Is it a 4 to 6 or 6 month or longer process? In which case, maybe you want to look at some other alternatives. If you are in a landlord state, a state where the laws are in favor of the landlords, then yet you are looking at more as an eviction. And if someone were to not pay you, that, hey, you probably could get them out within 30 days, 45, something like that. And if the contract for deed or a land contract didn't kind of be close to that, then you might want to consider a lease option. And we'll talk a little bit about one of the examples will be staying in the middle, a sandwich lease option, which is something I'm not a big fan of. And we'll talk about why I'm not, but why don't we talk about a couple of different ways that we can use lease options in our business and how they would work.
Okay.
All right, so let's set up an example. Let's say we have a house, and I am using an example from years ago because I don't use lease options this way very often. It certainly works, and I like to do it on, this would be closer to the median home price these days, but it was not, 6-7 years ago. This was, a couple hundred thousand more than the median home price back then. So it was like a $550,000 home.
Mm-hmm.
It was interesting. He was, I don't think he was in default, but he was about to be. The house was vacant. It was really nice. It was really interesting. He had this tiny sign in a window that said for rent, and he was not advertising online. And so, as you would imagine, he was not getting a lot of people looking at this property. And I'm not sure why he was doing that, but if I remember right, I think his payment was like $1,500, $1,600 a month, maybe PITI. And the house just needed a few little updates, but it was a newer home on some land, and would have been a great rental. I don't know if the numbers would have made great sense for a rental, but really what he needed was debt relief, and he no longer could cover a vacant property. And so I don't even remember how we got involved. We probably sent him some kind of information and he responded. And when I looked at the property, I thought, yeah, this is a nice property. And we decided to do a lease option, and which protected the seller because he would remain on title. He still maintained his tax benefits of having basically a rental, depreciation. And I agreed that I was going to pay him, I think it was $1,800 a month, a couple hundred dollars more than what he was had to pay out. And he would still be responsible for the taxes and the insurance. And I made him an offer that within 60 days of me finding an occupant, because I was not going to be the owner occupant, that they would then be responsible for all the maintenance and repairs. So for the next 60 days, which I knew was a bit of a hardship for him if stuff were to come up, but I just told him that if things are in good working order, you have nothing to worry about. And so he agreed. And what we did is, I can't remember the price. We probably agreed to 500 and maybe 505, 507, something like that.
Uh-huh.
And we marketed the property for 555, and we found a tenant buyer that put down, I think it was $17,000, and that $17,000 is what's called an option deposit, and it goes toward the purchase price if and when they exercise their option to buy. And we gave them like a 36-month term. And they also were going to pay $2,500 a month. And no, I'm sorry, it wasn't $2,500. What we did is we agreed to give the seller $2,000 a month, and we rented it for $2,000 a month. So really, we were wholesaling our lease option.
Yeah.
And so the seller agreed to take $2,000 up front, basically a security deposit. And and then they were going to start getting $2,000 a month, so they would get a little bit of cash flow. And we were just collecting the balance. So the balance would have been $15,000. So that's our assignment fee. And then we're out of the deal, right? So we teach the same thing on wholesaling owner finance, right? Raise the down payment, raise the purchase price. We find an owner occupant, put them in the property. We get paid the difference in the two, and we're done, we're out. This was exactly the same thing, except with a lease option. And then the buyer actually bought within like 2.5 years.
Nice.
And paid off the property. So let's talk a little bit about the pros and cons of doing it this way. Okay. So the pros are that it's kind of easy to get people to do this, right? Because sometimes landlords are not the best at marketing and finding tenants and finding them quickly and going from the vacant property to the rented property.
Yeah.
Maybe there's a little bit of repair costs that needs to go into it to spiff it up that they don't want to spend. And that might be making it a little more difficult to get it rented. In this case, they're basically saying, I'll let you do it. And you bring me the tenant, you pre-screen them, you find me a good tenant. And really what they're getting is maybe a little bit of money up front, and it's typically like a security deposit to them. Mm-hmm. And we might be able to get them market rate rent or above, because we're giving our tenant buyer the opportunity to kind of, they don't feel like a tenant, right? They have an option to buy this property. They're putting money toward buying this property. So they typically take better care of the property, and with the idea that they're going to buy it at some point in the future.
Yeah.
Okay. So
they got skin in the game.
Yeah, they got some skin in the game. So they're typically, not always, but they are typically better tenants than what you would normally find just as a straight tenant. And they're also agreeing to be responsible for maintenance and repairs. So you're saving, as a landlord, you're saving money on a property manager because you don't need one.
Right.
And you're saving money on maintenance and repairs because you don't have to do it anymore.
Yeah.
So you actually net more doing it as a lease option than you would as a straight rental.
Yeah. So in that scenario with the example you're using, what if the furnace went out? What if it was a major expense? The tenant would still have to cover it based on the guy's lease?
Yes. Which is a little bit of a concern. Not really about who would be responsible, but would the tenant buyer fix the problem, and would they fix it in a way that would be considered to be, you know, what the owner would do. And the hope is yes, right? Because the hope is that they're going to buy this property and they're going to treat it right. That's why you don't want to put someone in there that's, you know, barely getting by. Like, this payment is really going to push them financially. That is not what you want, right? So so you might, as the owner, you may ask that, hey, every 6 months, you're allowed to do an inspection and make sure things have been kept up. You might have in your contract that, hey, if things aren't kept up and maintenance and repairs aren't being completed, that once the owner has identified those things and you now have a certain amount of time to correct them, or your option is now void and now you would be evicted. So there's some ways that you can protect yourself, but yeah, you are relying to some degree. And I've had tenant buyers that are, I've had some that are great that, you know, over-improve the property, and that's always a bonus, take care of it very well. I've had others that if they didn't have heat during the winter, they may not have heat for the winter. So, right. So
they're over there burning trash in the corner.
Yeah. Well, maybe not to that degree, but you know, they didn't have money to, you know, put a couple thousand dollars into the property, and they did without. So that's not ideal. The good parts are is that you get a tenant that's invested in this property, that you don't have a property manager, you're netting more money. You know, the option price, you know, if you're wholesaling this, to me, it's the seller just names his or her price within reason, right? And as long as it's within reason, my answer is okay. And really the thing I'm more worried about is, can we keep the rent to a reasonable rent?
Yeah.
The amount of money that, you know, they need up front, that it's a very small amount. The negatives are, at least in my experience, and I've only done these in a couple of different markets, so it would vary all across the country in terms of what kind of money people would put up for the option deposit. But in the markets that, and I'm talking about Utah and Idaho, that what I found was it's basically between 3-5% of the purchase price that they would be willing to pay for an option deposit.
Yeah.
So $500,000 home.
That was about 3%, right?
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. And to be honest, that it usually was toward the 3%, not the 5%. So you're not getting that. That's why when I was saying I like to work on a little higher priced, I remember doing one on $110,000-$120,000 property. And wow, it was like pulling teeth to try to get $4,000 from a tenant buyer. When you're selling those lower price range, then people just don't tend to have a lot of discretionary money.
Right.
When you're on a little bit higher price range, they do. And that was my preference, is that I'd much rather deal with, you know, median home price or above for sure. And depending where you live and what your median home price, it might be significantly above. To me, that's the first thing. The second is that, you know, we've talked about this numerous times through the podcast, is staying in the middle, you know, becoming the bank. So buying on terms and then selling on terms, mostly to owner occupants, right? Where we can get paid three different times, you know, one upfront as a down payment, two as a monthly payment each month, and three, you know, when they refinance the property. Well, in this case, you can get paid the same three ways, and it's called the sandwich lease option, where you're in the middle. Basically, you agree to rent with a certain option from the seller, and then you are going to sublet the property to someone else for a higher option deposit, a higher monthly rent, and a higher price. The one thing I don't like about sandwich lease options is that because there's no actual recording of anything, you could probably record a memorandum of agreement or a notice of interest to make sure the seller isn't going to go sell the property to someone else.
Yeah. Or the title.
Or perhaps borrow more money against the property.
Yeah.
That's fine. And you absolutely should do that.
Yeah.
But the issue is that, okay, so let's take a really quick example. So let's say that on this property, Jonathan, you're the owner, and I agreed to buy the property for $500, and I'm going to give you $2,000 a month. Okay. Mm-hmm. And now I find a tenant buyer and they're willing to pay $550 for the property and pay $2,500 a month. Okay. Mm-hmm. So I can, maybe I'm giving you $2,000 and they're giving me 15 or 17. Okay. So I make the 15,000 up front. That's great. I'm happy with that. And I'm making $500 a month cash flow. I'm super happy about that.
Yep.
Okay. But now at the end, where I still owe you, let's say $498,000, because I paid you a couple grand, mm-hmm. and they owe me $535,000 because they paid, or $533,000.
Okay.
Yeah. Because they paid $17,000. I want to get paid, right? Because I'm still owed another $35,000.
Yeah, because of the spread you created.
Right. And the issue is that I don't show up anywhere on title. I'm nowhere in the chain of title.
Nope.
And yeah, I've never really found a great way of making sure I'm secured. I know that there are a number of ways that you could do it, but most of them involving the seller and letting the seller know what I'm doing and for how much. And I don't love that strategy. And so I would tell you, I'd much rather do a sandwich where I'm staying in the middle as owner finance rather than a lease option.
Yeah. Cause you actually have security there.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then the last part I would just say is we use lease options a lot when after we bought a property. So if we buy a property subject to, or on a wrap, or a trust deed and note. If we were able to get in light and we now want to just rent the property or rent to own the property, we have that option. And the lighter we got in with the seller, the more likely we can get our money back on a lease option with a tenant buyer. And the reason that we like doing that is that with a tenant buyer, there's really no principal pay down. So, yeah. My loan to the seller is getting paid down each month. The buyer's rent is not getting contributed to any kind of principal pay down. So when they go to buy, they're buying at a much higher price. So I make a bigger spread at the end.
Yeah.
Plus I get to take advantage of some of the tax benefits. So now I'm the owner and I get the depreciation of that property. The seller has sold the property to me and I am now doing a rent to own with a tenant buyer. So we love using lease options on that portion of it. And I don't mind using it on doing some wholesaling as long as you can get a decent option deposit because it's an easy sell to the seller. The only difference between doing it with a lease option and owner finance, with owner finance, we can offer more money up front because we'll expect to get a bigger down payment from our buyer,
right,
than our tenant buyer. So that part's good and bad. Sometimes the seller wants to feel like they've sold the property, which case owner finance would be better. Sometimes the seller would rather keep control of the property until someone's ready to cash them out. That would be a lease option.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So it's good. And it's a good strategy to sell on as well. So if you own the property, yeah, you said, or you buy, or you're buying on owner financing and use a lease option to sell property so that you get the benefit of principal pay down and your tenant doesn't until they, then they, you know, they exercise the option a couple of years down the road. So in your example, Jeff, you said, so the property was worth 550. Uh-huh. You agreed to 505, right?
Yep. Yep.
And then you found a tenant buyer that was buying it for 555.
No, they bought it for 522, I believe. So we added in.
Oh, okay.
So you just added. Yeah, we added their option deposit to that.
Yeah. Okay. Okay.
Yeah.
I heard that wrong. I heard 555.
Yeah, and you're right. I was confusing two different examples. So I'm glad that you made that clear. But yeah, there was one that we stayed in the middle of, and that's why I don't like staying in the middle. But the example I was trying to use was the one that we wholesale.
And yeah. Yeah. So this is an example of wholesaling.
Correct.
Okay, cool. All right. Well, so just to recap some of the scenarios in which you would use a lease option versus contract for deed, and let me know if I'm missing anything here, Jeff. So you avoid the hefty title transfer fees, right?
Especially transfer tax.
And taxes. Yeah. Okay. And tax. I'm noting that down. And then if there is an extensive forfeiture process or forfeiture timeframe versus the eviction process, that might be a scenario where you would choose a lease option. If it's easier to evict rather than force the forfeiture of a contract, like on contract for deed, if it's easier to go with the eviction route, that might be an option. A benefit of using a lease option over a, say, contract for deed. And then you're also able to, with any lease option, you're able to control the property without ownership. And then, you know, of course, less down that you're giving to a seller.
Correct.
Because you're basically putting down a security deposit or an option deposit about in the same amount they would get for a security deposit.
That's what I've always tried to do.
Yeah, so there's no big down payment, and you can wholesale lease options just the same as you wholesale any other property by assigning the contract. And then you can also stay in the middle and collect passive income that way. So
not my favorite choice, though.
Yeah, because especially if there's considerable appreciation over that time frame too. And you're locked in at a price already.
Well, and that's always the case, right?
Or whether,
we're just renting the property, you know, we're potentially saying, hey, we're going to sell this property at a higher price today based on that we expect that it to appreciate. But you know, these days it's probably appreciating significantly more than what our expectation would be, then that's the part that you potentially are giving up. I would also add one other thing that is a difference between lease options and owner finance. I think that you will see a lot more people follow through with owner finance than you will with lease options. And so you will have a much higher fallout rate for lease options. And that's because, you know, one, the amount of money that they've come up with is significantly less than what it would be with owner finance. And even though it is significant, right, you can almost justify over the next few years that if you walked away from 15 grand, that, it's not easy, but it's not catastrophic, You know, on that same property, you'd probably be getting a $50,000 down payment with owner finance. People have to think long and hard about walking away from that. Second, with owner finance, that down payment is a down payment. You are the owner, whether it's contract for deed or, you know, all inclusive, trust deed and note, all trust deed and note, well, whatever the case may be, you are refinancing the property, as opposed to, even though you put down an option deposit, you know, let's say 15 grand, I now still have to qualify for a loan to purchase. A qualification to purchase is more difficult than a refinance all the time. So, so those are some of the, you know, good and bad. And if you think that I'm leaning one way, I am, right? I like owner finance better, but that's not to say that lease options don't work. They do. And I have used them significantly in my past. Now I'm a little more selective of how I use them, but they work. And to be honest, you could make an offer with owner finance to a seller, and maybe you don't get the kind of, they don't accept, right? And now you go back to them with, hey, what about a lease option? And if you were okay doing that, you'll probably see that your conversion rate will go up significantly.
Okay. Well, I think we've provided a great example of lease options in this episode, and wholesaling lease options. And then, you know, we went over scenarios in which it would be more beneficial to use lease options versus like contract for deed. So
yeah, we're going to have another example next episode that might be a little more advanced using lease options.
Yeah. Okay, great. Well, cool. Guys, you can find all of our episodes on the creativefinancingpodcast.com. That's our archive there. If you guys are interested in Jeff's apprenticeship program, where he has a kind of national wholesaling program that's based on, you know, learn as you go kind of thing, please email Rebecca. And that's R-E-B-E-C-C-A at weofferoptions.com to get more information about that. And I know you have two different programs, Jeff, kind of one of more like an accelerated program than another go at your own pace. Right. So you guys can pick which one might work better for you. So yeah, email Rebecca to get information on that. If you have not already, please join the Facebook group, the Creative Financing Podcast, on there, so we can continue to grow the community and help each other learn creative financing. And then lastly, if you guys want the course, if you want to dive in and if you want to go all in on learning creative financing, then the Creative Financing Academy is for you. And you can get more information about that. It's a video course, right? And sessions with Jeff. So if you're interested in that, email Jeff at weofferoptions.com. And if you want to get a taste of it, we have a little video for you that you can kind of see what it looks like. But this is literally Jeff going through picking leads out of his CRM and creating offers on them. He talks you through what he's doing and why and how he comes up with the numbers. And so if you just follow along with him, you watch that video, you get your financial calculator, you follow along with him, you're going to learn this stuff. I guarantee it. So
yeah, and definitely order the free video. I mean, that is, everyone that's gotten that has really enjoyed it. So
yep, and it gives you a taste of what it's like. So yeah. Get that. So again, Creative Financing Academy, email Jeff, J-E-F-F at weofferoptions.com for that. So any last words, Jeff?
We're toward the end of the year. Everyone, hopefully you're your real estate business is going great. And if not, it's time to pick up the pace. And hopefully you're using some of these techniques and strategies that we're sharing with you. And if not, then contact us and let's see if we can help you in some way. So let's make 2022, let's end 2021 really strong, make 2022 your best year ever.
Yeah. All right, guys, till next time, go out there and create some terms.
Thanks for listening to the Creative Financing Podcast. We need your feedback to continue to bring you the best strategies in creative financing. So please subscribe, rate, and review the show on iTunes or wherever you get your podcasts. We greatly appreciate your ear, and please pass this on. Until next time, create some terms. This show offers general information on creative financing strategies and real estate investments. Nothing contained herein should be considered personal, legal, or financial advice. Every state has individual laws governing the use and type of documents used to execute strategies discussed herein. You should consult with a local licensed real estate broker and attorney before relying on any information contained herein. Information is not guaranteed, and opinions of the guests are their own. Profits are not guaranteed, and there's always inherent risk in real estate investing.